Greetings and welcome to Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. This is a weekly podcast of Sunday homilies and theological reflections given by the staff of the Catholic community and their guests. Today's speaker is Father Bob Glynn, S.J., parochial vicar of the Catholic community. It is the 25th Sunday in Ordinary Time, and the readings are from Cycle B.
Before I came to this world-renowned Stanford University, I was at another famous world university, Zambia Catholic University. Oh, in Kalalushi, Zambia. Oh, okay. Oh, some of you have been there. All right, well, that's clear. Yes, and it was a very exciting time in my life. I've never taught at a university before, and then that ended kind of quickly. But I was teaching English and writing and speech, and then I was the chaplain. And as the chaplain, I became, over a couple of years, quite disturbed at this kind of... They had three things they would always say about the university on this little crest. And it would say, faith, academics, service. Now, I had been there 2 years. And the only service I had ever seen was the students going across the street to Minasoko Pub to serve themselves beer. There was no service. And it disturbed me greatly. Being a Jesuit, we're just keyed into this thing on service. And so I looked around and I thought, I'm sure in one of the poorest countries in Africa, I can figure out something we can do. So after a little inquiry, I found St. Martin's Orphanage in nearby Kitwe, which was the big city that you really know of, not Kalalushi. But in Kitwe, they had this nice little orphanage, well, for orphanages, and it had all of these toddlers. So they were between 2 years old and 5 years old, mostly. There were about 15 of them, and then there were babies. So I went and I saw the nun who was running it, and I said, would you have any use for students from Zambia Catholic University to come and help here at the orphanage? And she said, yes, what would be great would be if you would bring them to come to play with the children. I thought, this is easy. They don't have to do anything hard but play with the kids. So I thought, this will be a seller. Well, we were near the end of the semester, and I had just given exams. My exams were finished, so I just needed to mark them. A lot of the students were still taking exams, but there was one student who was doing nothing as usual. His name was Yebo. Yebo means yes in the local language. Mm-hmm. And Yebo, there are probably some people like this at Stanford, but they probably get bounced relatively quickly. But Yebo was a fun-loving child, and that was mostly what he loved. So I thought, let's take Yebo along to the orphanage the first time when I go to reconnoiter. So I went, and Sister showed us the orphanage, and it was very nice, and Sister showed us the children, and they were very nice, and I said, all right, I'm going to go and mark these papers in the sister's living room. Yebo, will you go play with the children? Yes, Father. I thought, okay, grand. So about 20 minutes later, in comes Yebo, and it was not a hot day, but he was sweating buckets. And I said, Yebo, what has happened? He said, it's hell out there, Father. He said, one of them was stuffing dirt in another one's mouth. When I tried to stop that, another one grabbed someone else's doll and started bashing it on the ground until she decapitated it. And then the third one let this water just pour everywhere. So I said, oh, well, you've done a good job, Debo. I can tell you're enjoying yourself. So we went back the next time, and there were a few other students with us. They were wild, absolutely wild. But when you take someone like Yebo, once he's got the lie of the land, he's very good. And I was standing around, being father, kind of pushing people on swings and waving and doing those kinds of things, looking happy. And so then all of a sudden, Yebo says, we're going to play this game. And I thought, good. Any game they've got. So next thing I know, he's got a broken mop handle. And it's about, let's say, yay long. I thought, oh, Lord, what could this be? And he said, we're going to play Kashkulu. Of course, I was none the wiser at that point. So next thing I knew, he's screaming, Kashkulu, which means old man. Kashkulu, there's an old man in the village who hates children. And the minute they come near and make noise, he starts pounding the stick and chases them. Oh, they adored this game. I thought we'd be arrested for this in America. But, I mean, they're charging, but you know that look where they look just delighted while they're screaming and running? They adored the game. And Yebo was sensational at it. You know, and I thought, well, I mean, he has a talent. All right, that's good. Then we'd been there about six times, and I was in getting the punch together for the little snack that we had. And I heard the stick beating on the ground. I thought, oh, Kashkulu. And then there's all this screaming and crying. And I thought, I wonder what the hell's happened. So then I said, Yebo, yes, Father. He was standing next to me at that point. I said, what is going on? He said, well, Olivia, who was this miserable 12-year-old who was supposed to be supervising people, told us that we were playing Kashkulu wrong. And so I said, okay, show us how to play Kashkulu. And then she took it and started hitting them over the heads with a stick. Yeah, they didn't like it, and I wasn't too wild about it myself. Now, we sorted that game out later, but this little odd episode comes back to me when we read this very fractured gospel passage today. Good, now you can ask yourselves, how could Father possibly think of that? Well, I'll tell you in a moment. This passage is a difficult one. It comes right after the confession by Peter that Jesus is the Christ, which we've heard a few weeks in a row. So he says, I am the Christ. Everybody's happy. I am the anointed one, the Messiah. Everybody's happy. Then in Mark, we shift immediately to that Jesus then says, and I will suffer and be put to death and rise on the third day. And then there's this sort of unpleasant moment where they look at each other and they don't understand what he's talking about. Fair enough. And then they don't ask any questions because they're afraid. What are they afraid of? What he might tell them. Now, fair enough, we could end right there. But in this passage, we move on to Capernaum. Now, they've just decided they're not asking Jesus anything because he's going to die. They say to themselves, you know, he can't really mean that. They were fine on the Messiah part, right? He means that. But that business about, because if they believed that second part, they could never have had the conversation they had. Because he knew exactly what they had said. He says, I'm going to die, and they argue about who's the greatest. Now, did that not seem odd to you? It seemed odd to me. It seems odd to me every time I read that. They say, well, which one of us is the greatest? Now, in this situation, how could you figure out who is the greatest? Well, if Jesus is the great king, it's going to be the one of them that's the closest to him, right? Because if your friend has the most power and you're the best friend, you're closest to the power, so you're the greatest, right? Well, this was the logic, I think, that was going on here. Now, what happens here at this point is we have, I think it's something called cognitive dissonance, but those of you in psychology can explain that later to each other. But something is going on that's wrong. They have one set of rules they're playing by. They have the Olivia Kashkulu rules. And he has his own set of rules. And they do not get that he is still playing by his rules. They want him to change the rules to be their rules. Because he could then tell them who was the greatest and everything would be fine. But instead what happens is this very peculiar thing. Did you not find this the most peculiar part of this gospel passage? Your answer is yes. Okay, just, yeah, I mean, let's not have any confusion over that. All right. The answer is yes. Why is there suddenly a child there? I mean, really? Well, the reality is that when we played that Kashkulu game, when they were in the zone, I think, in the zone, that Kashkulu was real, wasn't it? They were completely caught in that world. And that's why children can enjoy games so much more than adults can, because the world takes them over. Livia changed those rules and put them in a terrible world of her own making. Jesus does something spectacular here. In the version I read that wasn't this one, it said, he put his arms around the child. Okay? And he pointed the child. He said, he tries to get them clear. The disciples are not great. They're good. They're trying. But they are not great. But the child is great because that child is embraced completely by the love of God. That in that moment, God utterly surrounds that child in the person of Jesus, protecting and caring for and showing what true greatness is, which is being embraced by God. Fully and completely, and in desire of that. Now, we run into a problem frequently, and our problem is that we are like the disciples frequently. Now, that could mean a lot of things, good and bad, but one of the things is the disciples' tendency to say, he doesn't really mean that. That whenever Jesus' vision of how it's supposed to be doesn't match up with theirs, they don't understand, they ignore it, and they don't ask questions. And they move merrily along as though Jesus is on the same path, merrily following them down the path to destruction. We can do that. We do it often when we read scripture or think about God and there's something we don't like. Like the story of the Syrophoenician woman whom Jesus calls a dog. Or when Jesus says to his mother and brothers, who are my mother and brothers? The ones who do the will of God. I don't like the ones, you know, where the end of Jesus is talking about the end of the world. So I just say, okay, those go over here. I'll stick with the Jesus that's here. And what we do is, we do exactly what the disciples do. We rewrite how God sees the world. And remarkably, God sees the world just like I do. God is so good and so smart. This is the danger. It's particularly the danger for people who take their faith seriously. When I begin to remake Jesus in my own image and likeness, and the worst moment comes, when Jesus can be just drifted down into the word nice. Isn't Jesus nice? Isn't he good and sweet? No, Jesus is God. Jesus is the power and love of God in the world that hates injustice, that hates things that destroy the good news that he promises. And whenever we try to make up our own good news, the good news of Bob or the good news whatever, or the kingdom of Bob, me, it's a disaster waiting to happen. We are called to be thoughtful Christians. We are called to listen to passages in Scripture we don't like. We are called to be challenged by things that Jesus says that we think, oh, I wish he didn't mean that. He couldn't really have meant it. We are called to read commentaries and to think intelligently about the words that are in the Scriptures so that they inform our lives rather than let me form the Scripture. Because if I allow God to form my life, then he surrounds me like that child. And I am surrounded and held completely by the mind, the heart, and the love of God.
This has been a presentation of Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. Director Gary Glover, with music by Albert Tomaso and Shane Clarkson. For more information, please visit our website at catholic.stanford.edu or visit our offices on the third floor of Old Union. Till next time, God bless you.